Hello there, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored as always by those rather lovely people at Natural Grower. Now, Natural Grower supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. They're absolutely crammed with certified organic growing power, and if you're looking for amazing results with all of your fruit and veg, your flower beds and houseplants, then Natural Grower's award-winning, certified, organic, peat-free compost and fertiliser are the very best you can buy. And your plants and gardens will love you for using it. All products are certified organic, they're 100% chemical-free and 100% peat-free. And those rather lovely people at Natural Grower have given me an exclusive 15% discount off all products for my listeners. Just pop MIC15 into the apply coupon field when you check out. In this week's episode, I chat to a friend of mine who's a garden writer and author, a climate change expert, and the new editor of Amateur Gardening magazine. It's Kim Stoddart, who you may recall was on the podcast last year. In this fascinating episode, Kim chats about her brand new book, The Climate Change Resilient Vegetable Garden, How to Grow Food in a Changing Climate, which is published by Cool Springs Press. In the episode, we chat about the book and some of its important key themes, including resilience and the importance and benefits of watching and being in tune with nature. We also talk about emotional regulation and nutrient density, with Kim explaining what these terms are and how important they are to us. Later, we chat about Kim's new role as editor of Amateur Gardening magazine, her plans for the future, and how much time does Kim actually get to spend in her own garden. And as always, there's lots more as well. So, without further ado, here is our chat. It's always lovely to have a guest come back onto the podcast. And today is one of those days when we welcome back lovely Kim Stoddart, who we spoke to a year ago. Can you believe that, Kim? A year ago when we talked about your first book.
Goodness me, doesn't time fly? It's so great to be back here again.
Well, it's lovely to have you back here. And since we last spoke a year ago, a few things have changed. A new book, a new job, which we'll talk about later. But let's talk about the new book. Now, the first book we talked about in the first podcast, The Climate Change Garden, written by yourself and Sally Morgan. Just remind us, what was that book about?
Thank you. Well, it was born really from the realization that there was a need for a guide for gardeners to help them cope with all the changes that were coming with climate change. So having written about it in The Guardian, having done a lot of research, realising the extremes of weather that were coming, that were going to increase, unfortunately, with our warming planet, just the realisation that there was a need for a definitive guide that helped people with the savvy on-the-ground solutions. So we self-published back in, it was 2019, just to get the book out there with a bit of corporate sponsorship. And then it was picked up again by Cool Springs Press, which is part of the Quarto Group, which was last year. And they republished it as an updated guide because a lot has happened since 2019 from a climate change perspective. So it was really sort of very much aimed around the solutions and just helping people to adapt no matter where they lived.
And you've been writing about climate change for over 10 years now. And I wondered, when you first started, I'm going to use the J word, on that journey of writing about this subject, are we more aware of what is happening now than we were 10 years ago, do you think?
Absolutely. When I first started research, when I first started researching about this when I was in Brighton, and I was running PR companies at the time, and I was in board meetings and, you know, it's notes from the agenda 2.1. And I was just feeling really, really unresilient in a sort of wider sense. I wanted to learn to make men do. And I was reading about climate change and it just scared me, the reality that was coming our way. So back, that was back then. That was business 16 years ago. So then 2019, when I was then, well, 2013, I was talking about it. And then when the book came out, we'd give examples in the book and I'd use examples, but there was a sense of having to convince people that this was actually a reality. But now there's something happening almost every week on the ground. So it's very, very different. Previously, the on the ground impact was being felt elsewhere. So in, say, for example, in the UK, we weren't feeling the impact of that. It was we could read about that it was happening in other countries, that they were struggling with extremes such as flooding, for example. So, but we've had extreme after extreme. If you just have to look at obviously this year alone, there's no need to pull out examples. It's just a moving thing. It's a moving beast, unfortunately.
And I think that topic of conversation, we've all talked about the long, wet winter. When is it going to stop? We're now going into the middle of April by the time this comes out. It's just rained continually. And we hear so many people saying, I haven't been able to sow seeds because it's been too dark, it's been too wet, it's
Yes.
been too cold. So we are more aware than we've ever, ever been.
Absolutely. And the thing with that is that on the one hand, it's good that there's awareness that there's the reality of our changing weather patterns, changing seasonality. And there's also more of a nature connected approach, which has happened since the pandemic. More people have got into gardening. So there's lots of positives around this, but ultimately, it's really stressful. On the ground, there's an awful lot of stressful things happening in the world right now. You flick on the news, it's thing after thing after thing. We still haven't had a chance to really recover and emotionally regulate since the pandemic because that happened only a few years ago. And we're coping with extremes that we're having to see with the weather, and then gardening becomes more challenging. So absolutely. But this is why, with the latest book, I wanted to focus very much on building resilience in the gardener as much as the actual garden itself. So it's not just about the practices, it's not just the things that you can do when there's a, I mean, for example, now, very, very wet start to the year, dealing with extreme heat, dealing with, we've even had wildfires, haven't we? Very long ago in the UK. So all these different things. So there's different ways of dealing with that, but you have to be able to cope with it as well. So my new book is very much, I'd say it's part self-help guide, and it's born of the teaching that I do on the ground. I do loads of talks, I do community growing projects, and all of the work that I've been doing has made me realize that that empowerment in the individual is as important as the actual how do I cope with this in the here and now. It's learning how to be adaptable and how to work around whatever the weather's doing at that time.
And everything that you write about, it isn't research or hearsay. This is from your own day-to-day experience of gardening in this climate, which we all are, and how you have looked to overcome some of the issues and find solutions. So everything has come from you as a gardener, which is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done loads of research, and when I first, my gardens first flooded, I forget the year, I think, because it was quite stressful. Just,
And because there's so many of them these
there were so
days.
many of them, I know now, but 2014, 2015, my gardens flooded and they really flooded. So it wasn't just, a small, extreme, sort of, it was an extreme flooding event. So that took me on a path of research and discovery and looking at how people coped in different cultures around the world with flooding, and that really took me down that path of looking into it. But no, you're absolutely right. I have experienced these different scenarios, and I've tested the techniques that I teach to the absolute limit, and I'm constantly amazed by how resilient you can actually make your garden. So it's I've also conversely had hardly any water. So there's, private water supply has run almost dry. So my plants have just had to cope. So I've really pushed it. And the ground in my polytunnels in particular, which have, they've been pushed to the limit with the lack of watering during a heat wave, is absolutely jam-packed full of mycorrhizal fungi. And there's all kinds of things that just constantly amaze me, how nature can actually come to lend a helping hand, and different things you can do that mean less work for you as a gardener and they're more enjoyable and enriching in the process.
You've used the R word a few times already in this conversation, resilience. And you just talked about a resilient garden. We talk about resilient plants. But the resilience is also important in us as people, as gardeners, as custodians of
Absolutely.
our land. What is resilience? For those who are hearing this term, what is resilience all about? And why is it so, so important?
That's a really good question. Thank you. Because I think it's resilience is a word, the R word has been used a lot, and its actual meaning has become quite broad as well. It is still a very relevant term, but it's bandied out quite a lot. Potentially is overused, but ultimately, it is about building the belief in yourself from a personal perspective, the belief in yourself and the ability to think on your feet from a gardening perspective. So to think, this is what's happening now. I've got some solutions, but how do I implement this? Also, it's about connecting with other people. It's about looking at who you are and where you are, and learning how to make the best of that situation. So there's all sorts of different ways that you can do that, and it's not a one size fits all approach. And this is the thing. I mean, I've to explain my sort of own background and experience with this, I have, well, firstly, I have a younger son who has autism. So I then went on this journey of looking into doing work with people that are on the autistic spectrum and learning about emotional regulation. So I've done loads of work in that field at the National Botanic Gardens of Wales, and I've written for Lancet about this. So it's a topic that really interests me. And then during the pandemic, actually after the pandemic, obviously, because we were all socially isolating, but after the pandemic, then I found that actually when I was working with members of the public, when we could do that again, and I was running courses, that I found myself using a lot of these techniques that encourage emotional regulation and the ability to connect with topics and to innovate ways, I suppose, opening up ways of being actually related to everybody. So I found that I was using a lot of these techniques across the board. Also, I think that we can't just ignore what we've been through with the pandemic. I mean, we all have our own journey in our lives, and we all have difficult days. We all have days where, for example, work could be very stressful, or there's been a falling out with somebody, or whatever it might be. But it's learning to actually adapt and to really make the best of the situation that you're in. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences over the years that really inform the approach that I take, and I love helping people. And I think with this, that again, there is, to answer your question, I mean, I could just keep talking about this, but to kind of, summarize an answer to that, resilience is about a personal journey. It's a personal journey, and it's a personal way of finding some contentment and ability in the way that you garden that works for you. And even nowadays, with although there's more awareness over different, more nature-friendly approaches, actually it's this one size fits all approach is stressful for people. People feel guilt all the time. Their gardens don't look like those that they see on TV. They feel guilt. Even if they're taking a no-dig approach, people feel they have to follow this to the letter. They feel they can't dig at all again. So it's trying to just take all of that and put it aside and think, how do I do this in my way for me personally? And to know yourself is really important with this, and to do it in a way that works for you and how you feel about everything. So there isn't a quick fix, but there is a lot of hope, and there is lot of enjoyment in this very empowered approach. So really, it's empowering yourself more than anything, an empowered approach to gardening.
And I think to reiterate what you've just said, we see on social media, on the television, in magazines, these perfect gardens, and the aspiration for everybody is this is what I should be achieving and I'm not. And you can feel a little bit weary, a little bit battled, a little bit befuddled. Am I doing this well enough? And then with that comes these feelings of frustration, of anger, of being scared, downhearted and a bit hopeless, which you talk about in the book.
Yes.
Social media, I mean, it has a place, but we have to be very careful because the nature of the beast seems to be that on social media, we show the very best of everything. We never see the garden, the muddly, messy parts of the garden. It's always the lovely parts, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is the thing. And social media is brilliant, and it has opened up the world of gardening to so many people. It has expanded horizons. It's a community. There are so many really positive things about the way that gardening world has been embraced online. And that's really positive. But I do worry also that we have gone from this state of fight or flight through the pandemic. We've then gone into other things that have happened in the world, which we don't need to mention now, but, you know, there's ongoing things that are happening in the world that are very stressful. And then the adrenaline, you know, the endorphin boosting nature of social media and search for likes and needing to produce constant content is also tapping into, again, that fight or flight scenario. It's continuing it. So it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. There are lots of positives, but I think it's really important to try and take time away from it in, you know, as much as you can. The thing with social media is that when you're on it, you then have to keep the algorithms fed. So you have to keep delving back in. So it's there's all sorts of different things, but it's, again, I can't emphasize enough that everybody's way of gardening should be personalized, as much as they possibly can. And that's when you really, really own it. And that's when it becomes fully alive and fun and, you know, enriched with all the potential that it has. And from a climate change perspective, the more that you can, as much as humanly possible, spend time just connecting with your garden and with your local community, the more that you will see. I mean, I make a point of just stepping away from the computer deadlines. And, you know, it could be something like weeding, actually, as you talk about recently in a issue of Amateur Gardening Magazine, your column there. You know, weeding can be great because it can, again, focus your mind on the task at hand. I like picking produce from the polytunnels any time of the year. I can pick some salad leaves, whatever it might be. And the more that you stop and you tune in, you can leave behind whatever it is that's floating in your head and you can focus. But that space is also it's the healing space, it's the creative space, and it's the problem solving space that enables you to think, what do you need to do around, say, for example, the fact that it just doesn't seem to stop raining for months and months upon end. I mean, I use humour as well in the writing that I do and the courses that I run. It's a technique that I use to connect with people as appropriate. Obviously,
yeah.
I'm not slapstick humour or anything like that. But, you know, you have to try and find ways of overcoming some of these challenges. And I think also for, you know, again, since pandemic, we've all become quite isolated. Although we've become very connected online, we've become quite isolated sometimes from our communities.
This is very true. Yeah.
So little ways of reaching out with neighbours, with others. I mean, I quite like it, even if someone's a bit grumpy, if you go into a shop or if you have a chat with someone, I don't know, a neighbour, and they look quite miserable. I actually feel that I want to try and connect with them. I sort of find it almost quite a challenge. And that makes you feel good, though. If you can brighten someone's day, even in a small way, this isn't a quick fix solution. There is no quick fix in solution in life. But these are all little seeds of positivity and kindness that ultimately will make you feel better about everything. And certainly from a climate change perspective, connecting within your community is also incredibly useful. So whether it's swapping seed from flowers that you've grown, from produce seed, whether it's doing a bit of swapping, bartering, exchanging, it's Again, it's reconnecting, it's reaching out, and it's making you feel like you're not alone in this. And this is real in a way that great though social media is, it does, like you said earlier, Mike, it does have that sense of here's the shiny thing. I'm just hiding that little thing over here.
Yeah.
Don't need to see that. Just look at this. Look at this picture perfect.
And I think so much has been written about well-being and being outside in the garden. And for my own personal experience, I've since the pandemic, I haven't had major issues, but I think I've been troubled more and more aware of that myself. And stepping out into the garden, say putting the computer, the phone aside, stepping out into the garden, hands in the soil, really, really does do the trick. If it's just weeding or a bit of pruning or planting, you're taken to a new place. And I
Absolutely.
think that is just so important. And just watching nature. Now, as a gardener, and you write about this as well, the importance of watching nature, what nature does, how she works.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I think that often we find it hard to tune into the natural world. If you've got a busy day or you're thinking about something, our brains, our brains are often full of information and full of ideas or whatever it might be. And if you walk outside and nature's noisy, nature can be quite hectic. You see garden birds just flitting around and they never seem to sit still. I mean, I've spent lunch breaks sometimes before going to photograph a bee, and they're buzzing around from plant to plant. But yeah, you have to very much tune into it. It's almost like a different frequency that actually it does take a little bit of effort sometimes to tune in, but it's such a positive thing, and it will provide that sense of calm that will benefit all of us all of the time. And often gardeners feel that they have often very long, exacting to-do lists of things that they must get through. But that again is just prolonging this fight or flight scenario. And actually, with the things that have been happening, continue to happen in the world, I think it's important to know that there is a much quicker pathway to whatever it is you as an individual have a propensity for. So it doesn't mean that you have clinical depression, or some medical condition that's stress related, for example. But actually, because of all the things that are happening, it is harder to be completely emotionally regulated. So it's important to acknowledge that and to know that. I mean, I have more of a propensity for sarcasm sometimes if I'm driving, and people's other bad behavior, but I'll just smile and wave, but we all, whatever it is, we're all different. We all have a shorter pathway to behave that maybe we'd like to rein in that aren't actually positive.
You mentioned a word then that jumped out at me, the word calm. We live in a very pressurized world, as we've been saying during the course of this podcast so far. Deadlines to meet, work deadlines, things to do in the garden, in the home. Do you think it's important to that sense of calm, that quietness? And that's what I get when I'm in the garden. That sense of calm is there. And after 5, 10 minutes, that buzzing in your brain about what's got to happen next, what am I going to do next, just quietens down. And you gradually tune in to the hum of the bees and seeing what's going on in the garden.
It's beautiful, and it's almost a bit like lying on a comfy, comfy bed, putting your head on like a feather-laden cushion. It just feels so snug and comforting, and we can't do this all the time. There's the day-to-day reality of work, but it's such a precious thing. It really is, and it has the potential to calm. If we're stressed about something, it's emotional regulation. It's not the most exciting phrase, but that's basically what it is. So but it's also good for ideas. So if you're feeling cluttered and overwhelmed, and it can help you make you more effective at your work. If you've got a personal issue, it can help you problem solve. It just feels so good. So the more that we can just even for a short space of time, put aside devices, put aside pressures, and just step into this space, it is such an important thing. And it actually makes you more effective in whichever way you look at it. In life in general, it makes you more effective at what you're doing. It gives you the ability to think clearly and to think constructively. So whether that's a falling out with a friend, a relationship, whether it's a problem at work, whatever that is, it will help you to really think about what you need to do. And that means what you need to do from yourself, from your soul. You're tuning into yourself as much as anything when you do this, because you're finding that quiet space that enables you to see you and who you are in real terms. There's no, it can be quite strong sometimes, that, you know, there's no hiding away from that. But no, it's such an incredibly precious thing.
For me, it's the clarity of thinking. Without the clutter, without the noise, you go
Absolutely.
Out there and the thing that's on your mind, sometimes it will be an issue at home or a work issue, or maybe just thinking about my next article for the magazine. It, just going out there, I can focus, I can think, and it's just undivided attention for my brain to actually compute what's going on and to then find solutions.
It's the prefrontal cortex in your brain that you're tapping into in this space. So it's, you know, that state of calm, you know, as hunter-gatherers, the fight or flight, again, rushing around, I've got to do all these things, that sort of space is actually was only designed for emergency situations, you know, be it hunting or whatever it was at the time. But actually, as humans, it's we do need to spend time in the space for ourselves, for our well-being, for everything else. So whichever way you put it, there's different words we can use to describe it, but the more we can do that within the realms of day-to-day reality, the better that is.
There's so much covered in the book, but another important theme is make, mend and do. Tell us about that, and tell us also about the late, great John Seymour.
I mean, when I first moved here to Wales, the wild, wild west of Wales, 700 foot above sea level, very remote part of Wales, very beautiful. I was very inspired by John Seymour's book, The Complete Book of Self-Sufficiency. So I would, you know, read it back to back as I was running PR companies at the time and present working for big clients, you know, very adept at all the things that I was doing. But, you know, I couldn't make a fire properly. I couldn't fix things. I felt very, you know, very efficient at what I was doing running the businesses, but I felt a bit useless in a sort of more practical sense because I didn't know how to do some of these other things. So gardening then was exactly what we've just said. It was a way of actually stepping away, making me more efficient at what I did. So that was brilliant. So then I wanted to make my career more in line with how I felt, what I felt passionately about. So yeah, the ability to turn rubbish into something useful for the garden is such an empowering thing. It's this sense of even if you don't have exemplary DIY skills, you can do this. Everyone can do this.
Yeah.
It's a case of just looking and figuring it out. I mean, I don't have a tool belt. I wouldn't say that I'm a DIY expert, but there's all kinds of things you can do out of items that will be considered rubbish. And you can get really creative with it. And it's really enjoyable. It feels like part of the solution to turn something that would otherwise go to landfill into, say, a makeshift planter or you know, an item that could be used, or even something simple like plastic pots that people just take to the dump. You know, you can be using them over and over again, and it all helps. There is no one thing that we can do to make everything completely okay. It's impossible, but bit by bit, these little acts of recycling, upcycling, whatever it might be, are very good for you as an individual, and they're also helping the planet in the process. So it's highly recommended. And the John Seymour book, it's quite interesting because I had such a love for that book over the years. But then I realized as I was experimenting with gardening for free for The Guardian, and I had to take the traditional gardening rule book back in 2013 and put it to one side in order to figure out how to garden for free. So I had to question things and I had to be very entrepreneurial in the way that I did things. And I was amazed at how many different things you could do that you weren't supposed to and how effective they were. And I realized that the John Seymour book, much as I loved it at the time, actually had very exacting lists.
Yeah.
Actually didn't really work for me. So I still have a fondness for the book, but I did look through it again recently And I realized how I completely disagreed with quite a few of the things that were in it, I have to say.
And we evolve. And that's, I mean, we can look to the past to see what
Yes.
happened, how they did things, and then we adapt to go into the future. And that's this
Absolutely.
looking backwards so we can go forward, which is another important theme in the book.
It's very true.
Now, I have to put my hands up here and say, I'm not a produce grower, I'm an ornamental grower. But growing your own produce is so important. Again, looking at the themes, it's recent research suggests that diets rich in fruit, vegetables, and whole grain can actually help improve the symptoms of depression and anxiety. So it's another great reason for all of us, myself included, to be getting out there and growing our own.
Absolutely. And you can mix plants. So if you're growing ornamentals, you can mix some produce in between. And there's lots of produce that is rather ornamental in structure. I mean, something like Swiss chard, for example, is rather beautiful to look at. There's lots of herbs that can work as ground cover that can also be useful to take to the kitchen. They will help boost biodiversity, that will help with natural pest control for your garden. There's so many different ways of doing it. And from a also, I suppose, health perspective, there's lots of research being done at the moment into this. It's not very exciting terminology, but it's called nutrient density, which
Okay.
basically means how good is the produce for you that you're eating. So a lot of what you would buy in the supermarkets, it's there's they you know it's being tested, and actually what the research is finding is that produce that's been grown organically in a no-dig system, no-till as they call it in America, a lot of the research is mainly in America, is that actually there's more nutritional value to produce that is grown in that more nature-friendly environment. So growing some of your own is likely to also be very useful in terms of the, obviously, the flavour. Nothing beats the of freshly picked produce, but also potentially it's better for you, which then makes us look differently at this whole idea of having to eat five or seven fruit and vegetables a day, because actually, if there's such a varying degree in how good those th that produce is for you, it just throws that whole idea out of the window. But so yeah, just wherever you can, even on a windowsill box in the home, there's all kinds of things that you can grow, the pick and come again leaves. There's all sorts of opportunities. I mean, my own space where I live, small holding, it's 2.3 acres. I've got a third of an acre gardens, which have lots of different gardens within the garden. So lots, so it's sort of exciting, and it's like I have a childlike enthusiasm for gardening, so it suits my personality. So I've got a container garden area, I've got loads of flowers, I've got a forest garden with fruit trees, I've got soft fruit areas, I've got all sorts of different shrubs and trees, but I still grow produce very close to the back door. Because that just works for me. Whatever the weather, I can go and pick it and it looks nice. And I grow stuff in the home as well. So I will always have some produce growing on the windowsill in the kitchen just because that makes me happy. And it's also practical because it's two hand. So especially with the likes of herbs, it means that I've got herbs I can just pick and use for cooking.
How much time do you actually get to spend in your own garden? You're clearly very busy, Kim. I know that for a fact. How much time do you actually get out there to indulge?
I don't get loads of time, but you know, that makes me appreciate it more. So actually, I would say I probably have about 3 hours a week during the, you know, say this time of year. During the winter, it would be less, but I would be doing other things. You know, I mean, cleaning the polytunnels, you know, those sort of practical tasks that, you know, take up time. But the actual, but you know, what I need to have is a garden that's really productive. And from a fruit and vegetable growing perspective, but also a garden that is used for creative thinking, like we're talking about, for well-being. I want to enjoy my space and not feel guilty. So the approach that I take is incredibly low maintenance. So I let things just self-seed. I will let plants self-seed in the polytunnels. So a lot of the time, the seedlings, that are appearing, they aren't weeds necessarily. Obviously, there'll be a few weeds in the, you know, interest of honesty. I'm not gonna, you know, hide things away, but I get a lot of seedlings that I will take to the courses that I do and that I can pass on to others. So for me, it needs to be abundant and productive. But I need to enjoy that space. So it's very, very wild, but it's wild in a way that works for me. I have lots of flowers, because I love bright colors. I've got a bright yellow VW Beetle, with actually, it has go faster stripes down the side. So it looks like a bee.
Funky.
Completely impractical, arguably for small holding, but it's very aligned with me. Because so with my garden, lots of bright colours, ground cover in between the produce, and it has very much a foraging theme because I mix plants. So it means that you don't necessarily just you have to look for produce, but it's my playground. It's my playground. So I let the natural world take center stage. It looks really nice. It's attractive, but it doesn't take me a lot of time to keep it in order. So it's very much channeling an old-fashioned, I suppose, peasant garden, like a workman's cottage garden, which again, would work with the natural world, but had to be productive at the same time. So I mean, I've experimented with how wild you can grow, and I don't want to grow as wild as I have done previously, but no, it's very much in balance, having allowed the natural world in over the years to lend a helping hand.
Wonderful. So that's the climate change resilient vegetable garden, how to grow food in a changing climate. The book also includes topics including drought, water harvesting, plastics, composting, the benefits of leaf mold, pests and diseases, and some great growing tips for growing veg. So much in there. Another book in the pipeline. Are you thinking about the next one already?
Not at the moment, no. I mean, all of my work has a central focus, which is helping people cope with the challenges with climate change and with the world at large through gardening. So I am editing Amateur Gardening magazine, which is fantastic. It's a much loved gem of a magazine that I took over in November of last year because the magazine went under. So I was tasked with through Kelsey, the publisher that saved it, bringing it back. So that's tapping into my skills as an editor and writing, but it's also my entrepreneurial skills to actually help make the magazine robust, use the resilient word again for the future, but also to make it relevant for the future as well. So it's coming up to its 140th anniversary this May. So there's been lots of work around that, but I also do teaching as well. So I still keep doing the community work because that also helps inform the ideas. It helps keep me grounded because the volunteers that I work with, they tell it like it is. So they will just come out with something if it doesn't work for them, and I have to turn up with tea and coffee and biscuits, or else as well. So it's good for me in a multitude of different ways, as is the actual gardening here at home as well. So it's all those things. But I'm doing a lot of talks, I'm doing a lot of podcasts, but it's all again, it's the central thrust of what I believe in as well.
Yes.
So it's, I believe passionately in what I do. And you know what it's like if you believe in something so strongly. Again, it's more than just a career. It's almost like it sounds a bit cheesy, but it's who I am. It's a life purpose. It just feels so great to be doing that. So I have to keep it in check. I have to spend time outside. I have to emotionally regulate as well. So I have to reel myself in because I get very excitable with my ideas.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? We're a lot of us, lots of ideas, just finding the time to do it all. So you do have to sort of be very realistic about what's on your things to do list. What can you actually achieve? And getting that balance right is just so important. And we
Absolutely.
can burn the candle at both ends, but we do need to make sure the balance word is vitally important.
Absolutely. I mean, I am so delighted with the way that the magazine, Amateur Gardening Magazine, is doing as well. The response has been absolutely fantastic. And I get loads of emails, I get loads of letters from the readers, and there's such charm in that. People actually feel so strongly about the magazine, they actually want to send in pictures and letters. And again, it's for me, it was always important to really connect with the audience. When I'm teaching, whatever I'm doing, it's important for me to help with the results to help inform and enable people to make adaptations. It's connecting. So it's for me, it was about the warmth and the personality, and that's what we're doing with the magazine as well. I mean, we talk about the friendly family of experts as well, just to give people a sense of connectivity and being part of something. So that seems to be going down a storm, which is
And
really nice.
when you look at who has written for the magazine, I mean, founded in May 1884, the first editor, Shirley Hibbard, a guy who was a great horticulturalist, but writers include Alan Titchmarsh, who was also the deputy editor, Monty Don, Charlie Dimmock, Bob Flowerdew, Anne Swithenbank. I mean, the list just goes on. Just such a fantastic family, as you say, of knowledgeable and friendly gardeners. What are your plans sort of like for the future of the magazine? How do you see it going forward? Have you thought about that at the moment?
Oh, there's loads of things afoot. So it's, I mean, again, my experience as an entrepreneur is really important to this. So it's that the main thing has been getting the balance right with making sure that we give the long-standing loyal readers what they're looking for, but also widening the reach of the audience because there was a lot of potential to do that. We've also boosted the advertising for the magazine. So we're getting, I mean, companies are, a lot of companies are very, very keen to be involved. So that's great. So that's really been turned around. We're looking at new outlets distribution-wise. And no, it's good. It's still early days, but it's going really, really well. But the thing with the magazine as well is there's lots of wider potential with this. I mean, the actual magazine itself is the most important thing, but we do have lots of plans around this for the future, which ultimately will help to boost the brand and the success of the magazine. But there's so much potential for it. It is such an exciting thing for me to be doing. I feel so passionately about it. And I just love the connection that readers have with this. It is such a historic magazine, an important
Absolutely.
magazine. It's a magazine for the people. So it's a magazine for gardeners everywhere. And this phrase amateur gardening just really, it had a different meaning when the magazine was first published. But ultimately, it's for us all as proud custodians of our plot that we want to find ways of making that work for us. So yeah, there's all kinds of exciting things afoot there. And Kelsey's a brilliant publisher to be working for as well. So they're very dynamic in their thinking.
So watch this space.
Watch this space, definitely. I can't say too much.
Well, that's enough of a tease. We're all very excited now, myself included. Kim, it's been great chatting to you today. For people who want to find out more about you, about resilience, about the books, where do they head to?
Thank you, Mike. It's been brilliant to be here. I have a website which is Green Rocket Courses. So there's more information on there. I'm also on Instagram as Kim underscore Stoddart, and I'm on Twitter, which is now X. I still keep saying that. I don't know why, I don't know if I'll stop, but that's at Badly Behaved One, which is a play on words because I'm actually really well behaved. And Amateur Gardening Magazine is, if you just Google it, there's all sorts of links.
Lots
There's
of
all
links.
sorts of sites. I've got a new newsletter which is going down really well. And yeah, but there's all kinds of things afoot. I'm doing a few talks. I'm at Hampton Court this year, talking at Gardeners World Live. So yeah, there's lots of things happening. So it's going to be a very exciting year.
Well, here's to a very exciting and enjoyable new year. Look forward to crossing paths with you very soon, Kim, and thanks for coming along and being so well behaved.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure always. Thank you so much.
Well, we certainly covered some ground during that chat, didn't we? And it was great, as always, to have Kim come along and chat about her new book, which was The Climate Change Resilient Vegetable Garden, published by Cool Springs Press. My thanks to Kim for coming along and chatting to us about the book and so many important topics, topics which are important to all of us gardeners. And as we said in the podcast, you can find out more about Kim by heading to her website, www.coolspringspress.com. greenrocketcourses.com, or you can head to her Instagram account, Kim_Stoddart. And if you want to subscribe to or find out more about Amateur Gardening magazine, head to amateurgardening.com and to their Instagram page, Amateur Gardening Official, and that's all one word. Well, thank you, as always, for listening in, and please don't forget to follow and subscribe, because there is still more to come. And if you want to find out more about me, you can head to my Instagram account, where you'll find me as Mike_thegardener. You can have a read of my articles on Substack, where I'm Mike the Gardener Rambling Prose. Clever, hey? And you can find me each fortnight in Amateur Gardening magazine, where I have my regular column. Now, I'm heading outside to pot up some new hostas. Shh, don't tell the other half. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.